The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Flypod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Today we've got Richard Paul Evans in. He's got a brand new book. It's not a Christmas book this time. It's called The Four Doors. This is a guide to joy, freedom, and meaningful life. Now, Rick, he wrote this book, well, because he was asked to speak at a... You know what? I think I'll have Rick tell this story. Rick, welcome.
It's good to be back. Thank you, Mark.
All right. How did The Four Doors come about?
I was in Dayton, Ohio at a book signing, and a teacher came through, and she had this envelope of money, which she dropped on the table, and she said, "My kids raised this for your charity." And then she asked, "Would you be willing to come by the school and say thank you?" And I had the time, so I agreed, and it was the next day. And so when I got there... she was very excited. She goes, "We were so excited about this that we, I told the district superintendent and we made it a district assembly. And so we have all these kids and you have an hour." Well, I wasn't prepared for this. So I walk out there, I look at all these kids sitting there and I thought, what am I going to do? You know, what am I going to say to these kids? It's tough talking to kids this age, you know, in the, around the ninth grade level. It's like, if you're not a video game, it's hard to keep their attention. And I decided I would tell them everything I wish I knew when I was their age. And that's what I did for the next hour. And the kids just were like spellbound. They just sat there and listened. And then I noticed that some of them were crying. And when I finished, they gave me a standing ovation. And then they formed a line. And I just remember the first girl I walked out, she just threw her arms around me. And I thought something really powerful happened here today. And I was a little bit amazed that how the teachers were watching as well. It was as if they had never learned these principles in their lives. And so I went back to my hotel and I wrote down those words. And that was the beginning of what became, at first, The Talk. We didn't have a name for it. We just called it The Talk. And so I've given that talk in maximum security prison to convicted murderers. I've given the talk to the top Harvard MBA graduates for one of the largest financial firms in the world. And so I've seen both extremes. I've seen how the book and the principles affect, well, how the principles affect people. And for years, people have asked me, why isn't there a book on this? You know, every time I speak, they want to take the book away. And now there is. I knew I'd write it sometime, and it just, this was the year.
When you did The Talk, which turned into The Four Doors, how did you remember everything that you said there? I mean, I'm sure you had an hour. And you know, had to let them know what you wish you knew then. How did that come about?
Well, they're life principles, and they're what I did is I just, as I sat there, I just thought, you know, what is it that? And I'm sketching this out because I have like 5 minutes to prepare, and it's like, well, what is it? You know, and I guess I work best under pressure. I was an ad guy in my former life, and to say, okay, you have 5 minutes for a presentation, and it was. Probably a good way to do it because it kind of cut through the superfluous. All of a sudden, it's just, what is it? What makes a difference? And in putting it in book form, I had a chance to really, you know, massage it because I've had 10 years to work on this. I've shared it with more than 100,000 people. So I've had the chance to see what really affects people. And then the beginning of The Four Doors of the book, I added something that wasn't in the original talk. And it, to me, it's the most fascinating part of the book. It's about how our minds work. And so it's about mental maps and mental magnets. And this has come through my study of belief, the prison of belief and belief systems. I love studying, in addition to biographies, I love studying institutions, you know, how they work, especially religions and cults. And so, in fact, I have kind of an ongoing dialogue with Christopher Paolini, who wrote Aragon, with his mother, because I'm at an event with Christopher, and I told him I just read this one book on a cult, and he said, come here. And I went behind the curtain. He goes, I was born in a cult. And we kind of keep it hush-hush, and at least I used to when he was just starting. And but his parents had written a very thick book about this cult, and they had appeared on Oprah. So I traded him. I gave him a copy of my book, and they sent me a copy of theirs, and I was fascinated. So we've actually been talking about the experience and how they got out of the cult and how it affected them. But there's certain things that are very common in belief systems, and if you understand how the brain works, you can make that work for you, or you can be controlled by it.
You mentioned that you have studied different religions. All religions, they seem to be based on the same principle, or what's your feeling on that?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, institutions, all institutions, first responsibility, so to speak, is to protect itself and to grow itself. All organisms, whether you're talking about a corporation or a religion, and this is where the danger kind of comes in. And the same thing can be said of governments. And so are they willing to grow at the sake of their members? And that's what cults do. They use up people and destroy them and destroy their lives. And so you have to look at what's the final outcome. You know, what do people become from these organizations? If they become better, stronger people, then you have something that's worthwhile. If they're just, you know, wiped out, then, stay away from it.
So most Christian religions say basically the same?
They follow Christ, the principles. I mean, there's some variances, and there have been for years, and a lot of fighting over little tenets, and you know, what day do we worship? What do we eat? What do we how are we baptized? You know, so yeah, there's a lot of little tenets, but I mean, most religions really boil down to the golden rule, you know, do unto others as you would have done unto you.
Richard Paul Evans, our guest with The Four Doors. You know, you go up to this author you talk about in The Four Doors. You've read his book. There was a chance to meet with him. You wanted to talk to him because you just love the book. And this happens probably a lot to you also, doesn't it?
I get stopped a lot. Last night I spoke to a group of about 300 people, and there was a young man who said, I know I'm not supposed to do this. Could I talk to you just for a couple minutes after? And I looked at him and said, yeah. So after I finished the line, he came over and he just said he had been really struggling with his beliefs and his belief in God. And he said, you're the only one who's ever made sense to me. And so, The Four Doors, when you read it, it's like, okay, this is real stuff. You know, and I hope we have some time to get into some of the doors. But it's like when you listen to it, most people who are older say, I wish I had this when I was younger. The one thing I noticed when we first handed the original copies out and the people who read it first, that they all had made lists of people they wanted to share the book with, including my editor, who never says anything about my books. In her words, I don't really read them. I read the words. I don't read the book. And she had a list, and she started telling me it really opened up something in her I'd never seen before, and giving these in-depth stories of someone and how, in their case, they had become a victim. They were living a life of victimhood, and how, you know, she thought this book was inspired. In fact, her words was, "Where did you get this? How did you know these things?" And that's a cool thing.
With The Four Doors, you of course went to a school to give an hour speech, which finally became The Four Doors. When you're at your book signings, how much time do you usually talk at something like that? And have you included some of the lessons from The Four Doors and from your other books in a book signing talk?
Well, in this case with The Four Doors, my book signings, I actually give the whole talk. And so it's more of a presentation with a book signing instead of a book signing with a short talk. I'm more concerned about that, about getting the message out. So it's a little bit different. But anyone who's read my novels through the years will get a sense of that I have obviously a strong belief system, and where's it coming from? The Four Doors is kind of like if I were to boil down all my novels, like, you know, maple syrup, you know, it's like, this is what you would have. This is where it comes from.
Richard, you know, we haven't really talked for a little while, and I just love to get you in here every time you're in the area. But what's Michael Vay been up to? What has The Walk been up to?
This is an interesting time of my life. First of all, the Michael Vay series is really fascinating. In some parts of the West, it's selling at Harry Potter levels, maybe above. And my first book signing, for instance, we sat there. We rented a large facility. It's like, but we don't know if anyone's going to come. The year before, we had, I think we had about 400 people came to the book signing, which, you know, we thought was big. This year, we had 3,000 people came. It was stunning. It was stunning. And we were not prepared. People were waited 2.5 hours just to buy the book. And then they had to get in line to get the book signed. It's interesting because I go to different places and these groups, they call themselves Vayniacs that are follow the Michael Vay series. They're very devoted. When the third book came out, there was the number 2 series in America, just above Hunger Games. However, it's like I find on the East Coast, not enough stores have got behind it. I was speaking at the, Southern Booksellers Association, and I asked them, I was there with Pat Conroy and, Jeffrey Deaver, and, but I asked them, it's like, how many of you even brought the book in? And it was about 20%. It's like, seriously, 80% of the bookstores didn't even bother to sell it. I said, this is a number one New York Times bestseller. How do you stay in business when you ignore this? And I didn't say that. That's what I was thinking. But afterwards, some of the booksellers came up who did have the book, and they said, well, it's outselling everything else, all the other young adult novels in our store. And so I feel like we're still on a mission that we're just starting. And this is not unfamiliar territory for me. This is how I felt with The Christmas Box. You know, my first book, I'd get places and it's like, you don't get it. This thing outsells, when it gets into the right place, it outsells everything. It outsells John Grisham, it outsells Shade, you know, 50 Shades of Grey. It's that kind of level. And so I feel like we're still building. Unfortunately, it's a 7-book series, so we have time. And so anyway, that's where Michael Vay is, but it's a lot of fun. It's fun having younger readers, because they're just so passionate. And I've now discovered what I call the Vay stare. And I can be walking in a public place and all of a sudden a kid will go into this trance, the kind of like stare like thing. It's like, oh, it's the Vay stare. And I'll walk up to him. I say, you read Michael Vay? He's like, yes, it's the best book ever. You know, it's really funny and it's very cute. And they're very, very, they're just very sweet. So, the second thing is my series. It's the Walk series. It's just been fascinating on many levels. One of which is I've had the chance to drive across America. The Walk is, for those who don't know what it is, it's a story of Alan Christopherson, a young man who's lost his wife. He's lost his business. He's lost his home. And he's lost hope. It's like, why do I live? I've lost everything. And he contemplates taking his life. And something happens. And he decides instead that he's going to just walk away from it all. And as far away as he can walk, and the farthest point from Seattle, Washington, is Key West, Florida. And so that's where he heads. And so over the last 5 years, I've had the chance to drive that entire route from coast to coast. And the experiences we've had have been amazing. I was caught in a herd of buffalo in Wyoming that we were in the herd for 45 minutes. We couldn't get out of them. We were in a tornado, and it had to take refuge in a hotel with a couple hundred other people as it came. It's like, it's just been crazy. And the things we've seen have been amazing. And so the fifth book is about to come out. And my daughter, who has traveled from coast to coast with me, she just gave me a grandson, which is the coolest thing ever. And so she wasn't able to come with me. So I took my assistant and we finished it. We drove from Folkestone, Georgia, and down to Key West, Florida. And, you know, Florida is its whole a nation unto itself. I mean, there at the top, you're in, the deep south. You know, we're eating mustard greens and grits and fatback. And then you get to the bottom and you're in Cuba and you're having every shade in between. It's such an interesting place. And as Hunter Thompson said of Key West, it's where the weird go pro. And it's like, this is, the stories that we had along the way, it's like, this is fascinating. So I'm having a lot of fun. I'm writing the final book in that series right now, but it's a lot of fun. It's an amazing thing. So the other part of The Walk is that there's just so many people reading it. And so I get fan mail from Brazil and Poland and, but of course everywhere I go in America, there's people and there's just as many men as women, which is rare for my books. It's really usually about 90-10. And this is almost 50-50. And it's really impacting, men. I was at a Michael Vay book signing actually and this, kind of gruff older guy came up and he's buying a copy of Michael Vay for his grandson. And he looked at me and he goes, "You wrote The Walk, didn't you?" And I said, "Yes, I did." And he said, "Your book saved my life." He said, I had lost hope in living. I lost my wife, just like Alan. He said, I didn't see any reason to go on. And, somehow that book came into my hands and he said, "You've changed my thinking, young man." You know, and, I've actually heard of I've had four people come to book signs and tell me that they had decided not to take their life, because of reading The Walk. And so, I think it's a beautiful thing we share because a book is about hope. It's about why we live. And I mean, how more, you know, core can you get to relating to people? And people are reading this and thinking, wow, why do I live? What is my life about?
Well, The Walk, that's the one at home where every time my wife finished reading that, I hear this, "Ah, oh, he left us hanging with this again. Now I have to wait."
A year, yeah.
About a year, yes, yes. But it is a real good series. And, of course, Michael Vay, I mean, anytime you can get kids to read, get them off the computer, away from the television, it's always a good thing.
Exactly. And that's what we hear every day from parents. Like, "I can't believe it. My kid left his video game." I thought, "What's wrong with him? Is he sick?" And it's like, he was in his room reading. It's like, what happened? You know, where's my son? And I hear this all the time.
I hope he's okay.
Yeah. he's reading a book.
Well, when you were down south, did you get a taste for boiled peanuts?
Who dislike boiled peanuts? No, I do not like them.
Well, you know, they have, kind of a spicy one too, a Cajun boiled peanut, which isn't too bad if you like spicy food.
I just kind of threw up in my mouth a little when you said that. I actually have a very tolerant palate, but that was something that it must have been the day, but I did not like that. But I try everything because, including fatback. I was like, what is fatback? It's like, basically what fatback is we couldn't make it fat enough. So we took fat and we fried it in fat. It's like, that's all I can figure fatback is. And the waitress brought out a plate of it. It's like, oh no, this is just, and we looked around the restaurant and I actually did the numbers. 86% of the people were morbidly obese. And it's like, you can't eat this way, people. It's like, I know you're in the South, your salad bar needs to be bigger than the rest of this. Okay. It's like, you can't fry everything. It's like, you're going to be sick. So.
Well, you know, it's probably a younger group also because the older ones, after eating that, they just have kind of a cardiac arrest. That'd be my guess. Did they have like fried Twinkies as a dessert?
They had fried something for dessert. It was just, everything was fried, the whole table, and I had the worst stomach ache that night. It was really strange. We left, my assistant said to me, she goes, "I have this craving to eat at someplace healthier like McDonald's."
That's scary. Richard, you want to talk about the four doors. What are the four doors? And, you know, the book has pretty much, it's framed with what appears to be like door jams, which could be the four doors that you walk to.
Right, leading to the open sky. I like the metaphor of the door. And like I said, at first it was just called the talk, and then I came up with the doors because for two reasons. First of all, once you pass through a door, you're in a different place. You're not in the same place you were before, which is true of these doors. Second, to pass through a door requires effort. You know, you need to open the door. You need to walk through it. You need to do something, which is what this requires. The first door simply requires a belief, and that belief is that there's a reason you were born. I read a lot of biographies. I've studied the lives of more than 200 people who have changed the world. I'm talking everyone from Charlemagne to Archimedes to Copernicus to Henry Ford, Steve Jobs, Hitler. You know, and I'm going through these lives. I'm thinking, what is it that these people have who are able to make a difference? And you know, some of them were just, you know, pure intelligence. But what why? There's been a lot of intelligent people. Why were some people able to make a difference? And it took a while. I was reading, it took years, but I was reading a book on George Washington when suddenly I recognized something that I'd seen before. And I realized what it was this belief that they were supposed to do something with their lives. It's like that was the only commonality I could find with all of them. They all did, including Hitler. It's like, I'm supposed to do something with my life. If you don't have that, you don't have a, you'll never make anything of your life. You just won't. It's the core belief, and it doesn't have to be a knowledge, and it needs to be that belief. And people, you know, ask me, well, I don't know what my life purpose is. It's like, well, you know, as someone said, the life purpose is to have a purposeful life. Finding what, well, Bishop T.D. Jake says something I liked. He goes, you know, find your passion because your passion tends to lead you into what it is you're supposed to be doing. But I believe in divinity. I believe in God. I'm pretty much out of the closet about that. And I believe that we have communication. I've had that whisper, what Gandhi calls the still small voice, what Ralph Waldo Emerson called that whisper that we hear alone. And by listening to that whisper, I have been prompted throughout my life and I have lived my dreams. So that's the first thing. And for me, that was maybe the most important thing, well, to start off with, to tell these kids, because some of them just didn't know that. You know, they didn't even think through that. For me, coming from the childhood I came from, I needed that. Came from a really tough childhood and to actually, think that there was something beyond, that there was a purpose to go on, was important.
In your book, The Four Doors, you say you wouldn't change your childhood for anything.
No, I'm grateful. And that goes on with the second door. The second door is to free ourselves from limitations. And one of those limitations is, and I hear a lot of from people who have read the book, they want to share it for this reason. One of the limitations is the attitude of victimhood, that people claim victimhood. And what victimhood is, it's taking past injustices and wrongs and using them as currency to buy out of present responsibility. Okay. It's like, I don't have to do this. I don't have to take responsibility because this happened to me. And they do it over and over and over. What they don't realize is that they are taking their power and giving it away. They also ignore the great truth that most of our gifts come wrapped as adversity. So in my case, the hard things I went through as a child, made me who I am. Even my Tourette syndrome, I have actually thanked God for giving me Tourette syndrome, because through it I have learned a lot, and it has shaped who I am and helped me achieve my dreams. So it's important that that's one of the things that people really grab it on the book about, because everyone knows someone who's living life as a victim. So there's two other limitations on the second door, and that is paradigm. And that one you just need to read, but it's fascinating. The second is fear. And far too many people live their lives dictated by fear. They're afraid to live their dreams. They're afraid to go out. They're afraid to take risks.
Now, with the four doors, you're giving a speech, and the speech basically is the whole book?
It's about a third of the book.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have that much time. I could. Yeah, so the nice thing about putting in book form is that I was then able to break it out and go into greater detail. And because the doors do connect to each other, which made it a little bit tricky to write. For instance, the third door is to magnify your life. Well, so much of magnifying your life, I mean, it's one of the principles there is take risks, take riskful action, which it really is a counter to the limitation that is don't let fear dictate your life. And so the doors are all interrelated, but this way in the book form, you're able to break it out and go into each topic in a way that you're able to give, I'm able to give techniques to help people. There's a technique on there about forgiving and forgiving ourselves, which is really powerful. In fact, I was able to release myself from two things that I had been nagging me for more than 30 years. And it's like, it's crazy. It's just like, why would I hold on to these things? And to finally to realize and to get rid of them has been really, really freeing.
So before we go, the four doors, who actually is this book for?
It's for everyone. It's for everyone, every age. I think you need to be at least 16 to really read it. I know a lot of parents are buying it for the kids, but, you know, it's, again, I wish I had this book when I was 16. I think I would have read it over and over and marked it up. And because there's a lot of really powerful techniques in there to give you the life you want. I was fortunate that I learned it at a young enough age that I was able to make it work. The most important door, though, is something that applies to everyone. It doesn't matter if you're 99 or you're 6, and that is to create this map, this mental map based on love, and that this is the highest aspiration of mankind, to have lives of love. And I think I make a pretty good case for it in the book and why we need to do that.
There's usually always a Christmas story from Richard Paul Evans. Will there be one this year?
No.
No.
No, this is my book this year. And I know I got a lot of disappointed readers. I said, you did this. It's like, it kind of hurts my heart when they say that, because this is more important to me than the novels. It's like, no, this is a much greater gift than some entertainment. This is something that will last with you for the rest of your life. So, but it's kind of like my book, The Christmas Box Miracle. It sold extremely well, and it was, you know, my writing's always the same, so it's still enjoyable. The stories are fun. I mean, I've shared it with enough. I know that people like it. So if you like reading my novels, you'll still like reading this. It's not going to come down like medicine. it's good. I think in some ways it's more interesting because I share very personal things.
Well, Richard Paul Evans, he is the founder of the Christmas Box House International. This is an organization dedicated to helping abused and neglected children. More than 50,000 children have been served by Richard Paul Evans Foundation, which is fantastic. You can find out more about that. You can find out more about Richard Paul Evans. Where at?
Just go to my website at richardpaulevans.com. I'm also on Facebook. I have a fan page there that you can go to, and I'm very active on it. I post several times a day, actually. So that's where you go.
The Four Doors, A Guide to Joy, Freedom, and a Meaningful Life by Richard Paul Evans. You know, every time Richard Paul Evans comes in, it's always a joy for me because I learn so much. Reading his books, I take a look back on my life. Maybe there are things that I could have done better with The Four Doors. Hopefully this book will make me a better person. And the stories. Say, if you're missing the Christmas story, this is Richard Paul Evans's gift to you this season. And I think it's a darn good one with some fantastic stories. Richard, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
Been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Richard Paul Evans, author of his brand new book, The Four Doors. To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.